Welcome to week 14 of our special blog series called How Einstein Would Get Pregnant. This is Joanne Verkuijlen, founder and creator of Circle and Bloom, found at circlebloom.com. This week, actually, we have a special guest, as we have been over the past couple weeks. I'm very pleased to have on the podcast with us today Helen Adrian, who is somebody that I recently connected with, and I'm so happy to have connected with her because we have a very similar mindset about the mind-body connection and her specialty in the fertility and infertility space. And so I'm very happy to have Helen. Helen actually has decades, I think, of experience in general therapy, and in particular, she specializes in infertility counseling, couples counseling for infertility. And she runs a seminar workshop with NYU. So she can be found at, hold on one second, I'm just gonna start again, Helen, because I'm a little disjointed here on that.
That's fine.
So NYU,
yes. Stress reduction classes at NYU Fertility Center.
Stress reduction classes.
And you don't have to be a patient to attend.
Okay, stress reduction classes at NYU. Did you say something else after that?
NYU Fertility Center.
Thank you. That's what I was looking
for.
Yeah,
and you don't have to be a patient there.
Fertility classes. Okay. All right. So let me just start again. So welcome to week 14 of our podcast series called How Einstein Would Get Pregnant, a fun and educational way to look at the connection between the mind and the body and applying it towards trying to get pregnant. This is Joanne Verkuijlen, founder and creator of Circle and Bloom, found at circlebloom.com. Please check us out there. We also have written summaries of all of our blog series within this How Einstein Would Get Pregnant. We invite you to come in and also comment, please. We'd love to hear your feedback and thoughts on the ideas that we propose during this podcast and blog series. So today I have a very special guest, Helen Adrian, who is someone I just connected with, and I'm so happy that we have made a connection because we have a very similar approach and mindset towards the mind-body connection, in particular as it relates to fertility. Helen actually is New York City-based. She's a general therapist, but she has a very strong specialty in infertility counseling. She does a lot of couples counseling for infertility, and she actually also runs a class at the NYU Fertility Center, stress reduction classes there specifically for, again, fertility. She's also just written a book, which is really what I want to focus on during this call and get her insight on. The book is called On Fertile Ground, Healing Infertility. And I'm very pleased, Helen, to have you on the call today.
Well, what a wonderful introduction. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for being on the call. Helen, if we could start off, first of all, kind of defining, just so we can set the boundaries, set the stage really for an in-depth discussion about the book and about your philosophies. But if you could kind of, within your own words, describe how you define the mind-body connection and specifically how it applies to fertility.
Well, you know, decades ago, in fact, centuries ago, the mind was given over to the church and the body was given over to the emerging science of medicine. And these days, it's all over the news that the mind-body connection is indisputable. There's been research since the 90s that makes it a moot point to even argue about. Recently, I went to a lecture by Deepak Chopra, and he had been given all kinds of heat 30 years ago when he first came on the scene for the mind-body connection by his own medical colleagues. Mm-hmm. And someone in the audience said to him, well, how did you contend with being, you know, swimming upstream against this enormous flow of denial?
Right.
And he said something that really hits the mark, and it's so simple, it's almost laughable. He said, if you want to understand the mind-body connection, wiggle your toes.
Right.
You know, like, hello.
Love it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and one of the things that happens when any of us are dealing with adversity, particularly if it is of crisis proportion, which infertility is, it's a mind, body, socio-spiritual crisis. Mm. It is nothing untouched. Mm. That the body walks the planet, but the mind flies off into outer space somewhere because of the agitation. And, you know, the agitation that you feel in the body
right.
affects how you think, and then how you think affects what goes on in the body. So it's a two-way street. And it is, I guess you could say, what happens when the demands of infertility, you know, come flying, you know, in your face, and the feeling of being completely out of control of your life kind of takes center stage. My, as you call it, philosophy, my approach has been to get the mind back in the body with mind-body orientation and all kinds of exercises and all kinds of maps that I give to people to help them understand how much they can regain the control that they feel as if they've lost. And the thing that's best about that is that, you know, everybody walks around with some version of why me. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, you can feel empowered to deal with this adversity.
Right.
You may not be able to control that you're on this journey, but you sure as hell can control the way you navigate it.
Right. I think that that actually, thank you for ending it with that point, because I think that that is the reason why your book resonated with me so much, because throughout mm-hmm. the book, you provide these, you know, very, very, you know, silver lining type, not pie in the sky, but, you know, let's learn from this. Let's move inside. Let's lean into the problem
yep.
such that we
yep.
come out of it, you know, a different person, a more grounded person, a stronger person. And that's really my journey. So
yeah.
I think it's absolutely beautiful. And it's hard for people as they're going through it, because believe me, I feel like it's almost yesterday when mm-hmm. my head was just as you described, in a fog, and I didn't mm-hmm. just, mm-hmm. I didn't want help. I just wanted to kind of, you know, just, you know, kind of, I walked around in this absolute depression and just didn't know, just didn't really want to do anything about it at the same time, but of course wanted to become pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that is a huge underlying theme of your book, which I find so empowering.
Yeah.
So can you talk? Go ahead. Yep.
Well, what I was going to add is that thank God for modern medicine. I mean, state of the art and science fiction are rolled up into one when it comes to the incredible approaches to facilitating pregnancy. The point that I make in my book that I'd like to just add to the mind-body discussion that we had a moment ago is that despite the fact that medicine is so laser beam focused on fixing, you know, or ameliorating, helping people get beyond whatever it is that's going on in their body, is that to their credit, they're looking under the microscope at where there's wiggle room to do something, you know, really outer space worthy in some cases.
Right.
Unfortunately, what the patient feels is that they are reduced to body parts.
Mm-hmm.
And on fertile ground takes a very central position that the heart is the heart of the matter.
Right.
And so that when I work with people, I really encourage them to be compassionate to themselves and to their partners, and to keep the love in the story, to keep the heart in the story, to keep the totality of who they are front and center,
right,
and to go from there.
No, it's beautifully said.
Yeah,
beautifully said.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do, you know, a lot of what I try to put forth as well as part of our underlying theme is not to ignore modern medicine. In fact, you know, it's incredible what, you know, doctors today can do, but it's just adding to it. Like it's patient, it's feeling as you very nicely put, you know, feeling whole again, not reducing yourself mm-hmm. to body parts, which modern medicine does. But so mm-hmm. it's your job as a patient and as a person, as an individual wanting to live your best life, to always keep in mind that, you know, you are a whole person and there are things that you can do to improve, you know, improve the efficacy of modern medicine as well as keeping mm-hmm. yourself healthy. So can you?
Well, the other thing that is right along the lines of what you're saying, Joanne, is that it makes you a partner with your doctor.
Right.
And you're not anybody's victim. And you know, there's also the aspect of you're the one living in your body. I wish I had a penny for every time somebody said to me, "This doesn't feel right to me." I know I can get pregnant on my own is one of the comments that I hear. Mm-hmm. I had a woman that I was working with a while back who was near 40 when she married and wanted to, you know, to have a child. And she went to, it wasn't happening. She went to a reproductive endocrinologist who came out with bells and whistles and all kinds of things. And she came back to me a session later and she said, "He wouldn't listen to me. Mm-hmm. I don't ovulate in the middle of my cycle." Mm-hmm. And she did conceive on her own when she respected what she felt was going on in her body.
Right.
And so, you know, it's one thing to look at the doctors as experts, which they are, but it's another thing to throw away your own intuitive sense. That's a mistake. Intuition is a huge part of mind-body connection.
So agree. And I've mm-hmm. got a lot of stories there, and so I don't want to diverge too quickly in, at the beginning of the conversation, but could you talk first, Helen, about why you decided to write this book?
Well, I would say that I had already been in practice for almost 3 decades when I first sat down at the computer and the book started flowing out of me as if it was demanding that it be written. Mm-hmm. And also, I knew what was out there in the literature, and I was getting validation from patients that there was a dichotomy between the books that say, if you want to get pregnant, here's what you do, mm-hmm. and they tend to be medically oriented, and mm-hmm. sometimes they were even psychologically oriented, and other books that one of my former patients labeled the yoga kind of books, mm-hmm. the Eastern approach to adversity, yes, but without a connection to the more concrete approach that was in the literature, which frustrated this particular woman very much. And when I put out my email to former patients, this is what I'd like to do. Here are the questions that I have. If you'd like to be involved, please contact me. She was the first one to call. She said, "Helen, I could tell from your email that you wanted to bridge the West to the East, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. the Western medical, concrete, hardcore approach with the mind, social, spirit approach." Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I set out to do.
Well, in reading the book, I think I emailed you after I read the first even introduction or preface, because I was like, this, you know, was really just spot on and so well written and full of your own personal insight, as well as you know, your patients and other people that mm-hmm. you've interacted with, their real stories. And it's almost as if each chapter could be its own book. I mean, that's how, you know, compact and full, just full of rich information the book is. So congratulations on...
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your kind words. And I know that I organized the book based on my, you know, at this point, 32 years of experience. But I have to say, I do consider the people who showed up to be interviewed and the people that I've worked with, you know, just over the years who've taught me everything that they needed me to know about infertility, I consider them to be the real experts. And in fact, if you don't mind, I'd like to read something that was sent to me by a patient of a very dear colleague of mine who was struggling with infertility at the time. And I spoke to my colleague and I said, you know, I have a draft of this book and I'd like to give it to somebody who's in the midst of this struggle. And I'm not sure that it would be ethically okay to give it to one of my own patients. And so she connected me with a patient of hers to whom I gave a draft of the book. And I'd like to read just a short paragraph what she wrote to me when she finished reading the book. She said, I was struck by the thought that turning inward, which I call learning to be, not only helps to provide a diversion for the infertility issue, but it also gets deeper into long-term healing. I was thinking that at such a turbulent time, it's almost overwhelming to think of examining who you are. Yet if you can push past that, the rewards are plenty. After reading this book, I felt very hopeful. Learning how the infertility process became a learning experience that had lasting effects made it seem almost worthwhile. It is your choice to make it what you wish. And that I knew when she sent me that I had achieved my goal, which is to bring people back far enough to have a perspective on what it is that's going on, at the same time that I bring them into, so it's being you, being inside the experience, and also seeing you, seeing who you are, and examining yourself for the opportunities for growth. And what I do in the book is I lay out six personality traits that ordinarily fly, you know, off the Richter scale when people are dealing with any adversity. And so people can measure themselves against how others who have been through this handled things and what they learned about dealing with negativity, dealing with anger, dealing with insecurity, fear, you know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So it was very rewarding to know that that this book could be practical and at the same time philosophical, and that people could come away feeling, you know, relieved and hopeful. So I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Yeah. And this may be too hard of a question to answer because the book is very in-depth, as I said, but if you were to just summarize for the listeners on the call, you know, the top, I don't know, 3 to 5 things that you would recommend someone, you know, who really wants to approach this situation in their lives at this point from a whole body perspective, from a mind-body unity, as you'd said, mind-body-spirit perspective, what would you suggest?
Well, the first thing is, again, like Deepak Chopra's comment, so simple it's almost laughable, and that is that our breath is a tranquilizer. And when we're stressed, we don't breathe sufficiently. Mm-hmm. And if your listeners now could just do a little body scan and notice how they feel without judgment. You know, it's not, oh my God, I have a kink in my neck. No, just notice how you feel. That's all. Mm-hmm. And then close your eyes and take a generous inhalation, slow and deeper than is customary. And then just as gently release it. Right. I have on rare occasions had people say that nothing is different. Most people say, wow, yeah, I do feel a shift, mm-hmm. right? And so the question then becomes, if one breath can create a shift, what about purposefully breathing in that way, which is the first exercise that I teach in the book? You know, it's called the relaxation response. And you don't have to have any fancy names. You don't have to have any fancy techniques. Just sit down, close your eyes, and breathe deeply for 1 minute.
Right.
Right. Now, of course, what helps with the relaxation response is that you're also clearing your mind.
Right.
Which is, you know, I don't want to get into the details of that. But the point is that there's no way to be slapped with a diagnosis of infertility without immediately flying off into some variation of depression and anxiety. They
right.
are companions.
Right.
They're going to follow you around. And the idea is to come to understand that even if you have a history of depression and anxiety, there are ways to study yourself and to learn that you can rise above what feels like it's coming from inside and learn to manage it. And once you learn to manage it with not only experiential exercises, but also cognitive understandings, that your life can change and you get to go through the rest of your life with a set of techniques that will help no matter what it is that
agree.
You're dealing with. And,
so agree.
You know, and the thing is that, you know, when you're in the midst of infertility, it's like, oh, this is never going to end, and worried about outcome and all kinds of things like that. But this is a phase that's not going to be forever because
right.
it's going to get resolved by hook or by crook.
Breath.
And then if you're living on planet Earth, there's going to be something else, you know,
right.
coming along.
No, it's so funny because as we were just talking, my husband came in and he knew I was recording a call and he was just kind of slamming things around in the kitchen and slams the door. And so a heat of anger just flew, you know, went through me completely. And I said, well, let me look at this differently. Let me do a breath, just like you just said, and
exactly.
center myself again. And I was able to let it go. Like,
yeah,
so this
go.
Is not, this is for absolutely the rest of your life. And I so agree.
Yeah.
And it reminds me very much of, I absolutely adore the work of Eckhart Tolle, who's written
yes.
Two powerful books.
Right.
And The Power of Now and
of Now,
A New
right,
Earth.
Right, right.
And
uh-huh, right.
I so he and he's all about the greater consciousness and seeing yourself from above almost, but being present in your body, being present of your thoughts at all times, because you know, you can just kind of lose yourself. And I think that it's all connected to this, and absolutely breathing is, you know, being conscious. And I love how you said breath, you know, breath as a tranquilizer, your breath,
yeah,
you know, centering
yeah.
yourself by focusing on your breathing. And that's why all of our programs and sessions start with a deep breathing, three deep
yeah,
breaths.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They, I'm sure the people who use the program kind of get sick of that part, but it's absolutely how we start off each session, is centering yourself
yeah.
with breath. So anyway.
And
so that,
and to just put a semicolon and maybe add something to your label, drawn from Eckhart Tolle's title, The Power of Now, it's about being in the present moment.
Right.
And, you know, most people are looking backwards or looking forwards, and there's an expression, I hope it's okay to say on this podcast, but if you have 1 foot in the past and 1 foot in the future, you're peeing on the present, right?
I've never heard that. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and so, you know, all we have is the present moment. That's
right.
it.
Right.
You know, and it's perfectly natural to be worried about outcome. And it's perfectly natural to be using the past to predict the future. The problem with it being natural is that it's harmful. It doesn't help, right? And so if you can take a deep breath and say, that felt pretty good, right this minute, I'm okay. And then you take another breath and you say, right this minute, I'm okay. Then you get to be okay a lot.
Right, right.
Right?
That's beautiful. Yep. So breath as the first point, focusing yourself
yeah.
in the present moment and just learning how to be conscious of your feeling, of your body and your in
mm-hmm.
feeling and feeling how you feel.
Yeah.
So that would be the first.
Yes,
suggestion.
And then I would say that another takeaway would be the feeling of satisfaction that we can walk around with if we learn that we can respond to adversity rather than react to it. And you just gave a beautiful example with letting go of that interference that you felt coming from your husband. That we, you know, not that you get to be in a place where you always respond, you know, forget that. I mean, of course you're going to, you know, you're going to have knee-jerk reactions. It's just part of being human. But that doesn't mean that you can't catch yourself and say, am I getting my body in a twist by doing it this way? What are my choices? Let me just take a deep breath and clear a space for my brain to come back into the story so I can think about what else I can do.
Right. No, that's great. And it's almost, it reminds me as well of the idea that if you hold resentment or if you're angry at somebody else and you keep that inside, it's like you're the one that's harming yourself. It's not helping you at all. It's maybe satisfying some ego need, but it's not helping you. So,
well, one of the things that I do in the book that I like so much is that I bring the I bring brain science into the story.
Right.
And so, you know, you call it ego, which you're right, and then there is the limbic system of the brain, which is the place that holds emotion and memories. And so those knee-jerk reactions are coming automatically. And what I've done in the book is I've made it clear to people who might on many occasions have made a promise to themselves, a New Year's resolution, whatever you want to call it, and then felt 3 minutes later that they're a failure because they couldn't sustain whatever they promised themselves. What I do in the book is I legitimize the normalcy of resistance to change. And I think that is a key point because, first of all, infertility comes barging into your life and changes it so that it's virtually unrecognizable, right? And so now what I had in my mind was to give people the tools to ride the wave of change rather than be swamped by it, to turn the tables on change, if you want to say it that way, to decide what you want to change, and then to give people ways to deal with their resistance, ways to deal with their unconscious mind, to come to understand the full picture. Because one of the things that always irked me about self-help books is that they are written in a way, they don't say it literally this way, but they may as well say, all you have to do is.
Right.
Well, come on, you know, if all you had to do is, we wouldn't need your book.
Right.
What else is interfering? And I wanted to give people who maybe couldn't afford to come into therapy or, you know, were averse to it for one reason or another, to still have something that I call bibliotherapy, that if they use this book as a guidebook, you can read it through and it's very readable, but if you stop on the places where there is this kind of information and you discipline yourself and you give yourself a chance to learn techniques, coping mechanisms that you didn't know before, without your own built-in resistance knocking you off course, then you're going to come out ahead of the game.
Right. Now, that's great. So what would you say then would be, is that, do you want to add to your little takeaways or?
I think that, that, you know, learning, you know, the value of the breath, learning the normalcy of resistance to change.
Right.
And really understanding that you can respond rather than react and thereby grow yourself and get to feel not only satisfied that you're not a victim, but then have a program to go forward into other adversities, that's a lot. But I think what the book does along the way is by telling vignettes from other people's experience, people who have been there and are on the other side of the fertility struggle, I think it really gives people, you know, sort of like when you're climbing Everest, there's always a way station,
right,
where you stop and adjust to the change in atmosphere and you rest, get ready for the next leg of the journey. Those stories, I think, are very palliative.
I agree.
And, you know, I don't know if you'd like me to read a couple of, you know, the words of a few of the people who have contributed, because I think it just says so much.
Sure, please do. That would be great.
After trying to get pregnant naturally, we realized that things were not happening. I realized I was in overdrive and I needed to change, keyword, right? I learned that I could choose ways to deal with infertility so I could have hope and not let my mind tell me otherwise. I was working way too hard. Eventually, I quit my job and took some part-time work. I focused on bringing my body into a more grounded, healthier state. The anorexia in my past made it necessary for me to reconnect with what my body was supposed to do, and I learned how to be more at peace with myself.
Mm.
Right?
That's beautiful.
I couldn't say it better than that.
Right. No, I have my very close friend who actually I refer to a lot, because she was, I call her my muse, because when I first had the idea for Circle and Bloom, she was trying to conceive her second child. And actually, no, I'm sorry, it was her third child she was trying to conceive. And so I created the program for her next cycle. So it was like I had, which helped so much, because I had somebody in mind that I was actually creating this specific program for. And what happened with her, and this goes back to the intuition, was that she listened to the program for the first month, and then she started listening to it in her second cycle. And her body just absolutely told her in no, you know, while she was listening to the program in a deep state of relaxation, she heard her body say, nope, this isn't happening. This is not going to happen. She couldn't point to the reason why. We get some people who literally can get strong intuition feelings back from their body about the number of eggs they have in the left ovary, for example, which is amazing in and of itself. But her, going back to her story, her body said nope. And what she was able then to do was to close that chapter, I should say, in her family building efforts, and move on to the next chapter, which was adoption. And I've written all about her, the adoption journey as well, which don't ever let anybody tell you that adoption is easy. But it, you know, they have a beautiful little boy now, and they say both parents say, you know, they look into his eyes and they know that everything happened for a reason.
Yep.
And they have this little boy now, and yes, time has passed, but they hold this little boy, and this was what was meant to be. And so, anyway, it's just another story that, you know, people may, you know, glean some strength from. And it takes strength, it takes endurance, it takes perseverance. But you'll get to where you want to go. In fact, when I was so many stories, but one story in particular, when I was just starting off with again creating this program, is that I have a really good friend, and she said, who's an artist actually, and she said, Joanne, she said, your idea is so, you know, because I was saying, there's so much to do. How am I going to get this done? How am I going to be able to do, you know, so much recording, so much writing, so much. And she said, Joanne, she said, do you see the end goal? She's like Michelangelo did, right? When you see, he always saw David, you know, even though he was looking at physically a block of marble, right? Each chip gets you to your goal. And the same thing as the Tao Te Ching, which says, a journey of a million miles starts with a single step, you know, yeah. So it's taking, and it's, so it goes all back, wrapped back, I think, to the being in the present moment, taking that one step and being present and going through everything you need to do to get to where you want to go.
Well, there's one more point that I'd like to make, but first I'd like to say, based on your story about your friend, that having listened to your audio program, I have to say it is exquisite. And it's not a surprise to me that she came to an insight, because your lovely voice and just your approach.
Thank you, Helen.
You can't help but sink into a place where what you know that you don't necessarily know that you know can come forward.
Right, right.
And that's what happened. And, you know, so that's a beautiful story and a beautiful part of this. I call it diving under the turbulence, and that the techniques that I teach, you know, particularly self-hypnosis, has incredible power to help people find what they need, the answers that they need.
Right.
But the point that I want to make has to, I just want to read one more passage.
Please.
And then it sort of says it for me. At the beginning, the infertility did cause conflict. So what I'm moving into now is the relationship, the very crucial relationship where the love affair that wants to make a baby in the first place gets so, you know, out of whack because of the impact of the infertility on two people who may be experiencing the stress very differently. And she goes on to say it was very stressful before we actually got a diagnosis, and we were just trying and failing. We were in the honeymoon phase of our marriage, which came to an abrupt end, sort of a screeching halt. Then we found out it was male factor. He didn't want to talk about it, and it was all I wanted to talk about.
Right.
We actually went to a couples counselor. Once we realized that his guilt explained his resistance, but his resistance to talk was giving me incredible anxiety, we were able to have a lot more sympathy for each other, which brought us to a more mature stage of our marriage. Mm. And, you know, aside from the fact that, you know, just to the naked eye, you can see how stress, the impact of stress, two people, you know, responding differently. But what's also lost is the ability to express your love for one another sexually.
Right.
And, you know, how, you know, it's sex on demand is not a particularly sexy way to go. I've heard men say things to me like, she only wants me when she's fertile. It's an ordeal. And then IVF makes sex, not only makes it unnecessary, but as one new book has put it, makes a man fall in love with his plastic cup.
Right.
You know.
Right. No.
And
very.
What somebody, you know, I mean, come on. So now this is something that you know, I work very hard to build not only self-awareness but other awareness, so that there can be compassion for each other. And that you can, no matter what, keep love in the story.
Right. No, that's absolutely right. That's so right on. So we're about out of time, Helen. I wanted to make sure that people know how to reach you. I did mention that you run stress reduction classes at NYU Fertility Center, and I know you wanted me to mention that it's open to everybody, so you don't have to be a patient with NYU.
Right.
But if people are calling, if people are listening from California or something, would you, do you, so your email address would be great if you can just mention that in your website. We will have on our website the place where people can find out how to order your book. Is it on Amazon as well, Helen?
It's on Amazon, yes.
So the name of the book, just, and you can search it on Amazon on your own. You can also find the link on our website, is On Fertile Ground. And Helen, so how would people?
And you need to add. You need to add healing infertility, because otherwise you're going to get a book by a farmer.
Oh, are you? That's so funny. So On Fertile Ground, Healing Infertility. The author again is Helen Adrienne. His last name is spelled A D R I E N N E. So Helen, how would people reach you besides finding your book on Amazon?
Well, I would welcome phone calls, 212-758-0125. And I have to say that my training and experience and skill as a hypnotherapist makes it possible for me to work over the phone, because you mentioned something about California. I worked with a woman in London a while back, and I'm more than happy to do phone sessions if people are out of the New York metropolitan area. My website is www.mind-body-unity.com. And my email is helen@mind-body-unity.com. And I'd be more than happy to hear from any of the people who are in the Circle and Bloom world.
Great. And Helen, just repeat your telephone number one more time as well for people.
Okay. It's 212-758-0125.
Great. So, Helen, thank you so much. And again, people can find out all the information about this on our blog as well. So that's circlebloom.com/blog. And you can go right to week 14 of our How Einstein Would Get Pregnant blog series and find out all of the details there as well, which we will summarize for you. So thank you for listening. Thank you, Helen, for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
And thank you so much for the opportunity to get the message out, Joanne. Perfect. I appreciate it very much.